This episode and others like it are brought to you by the generous support of my patrons on Patreon. If you'd like to help support this channel, join our growing Discord server, and get early access to every video, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/secondthought. Throughout the well-worn pages of history, empires have risen, grown to prominence, and collapsed into the mist of time. The Roman Empire, stretching from the sweltering sands of Africa to the murky woods of northern England. The British Empire and her dominance of the Seven Seas. Radio Shack. All of these and more have become the stuff of legend, each with their own stories of success, expansion, and, ultimately, collapse, unable to bear the weight of their inherent contradictions. But are all empires destined to meet this fate? And the question on everyone's mind, probably because it's the title of this video, are we living through the end of an empire? In this episode, we'll take a look at the precarious position of the United States and consider some historic parallels to assess whether the US is really in decline. All right, here we go. I'm ready. Nope, that's terrible. All right, I'm ready. Rome. Or are we doing this as two takes? Okay, here we go. I'm ready. Ah, Rome. The empire all other empires aspire to be. From their breathtaking architecture, to their lavish feasts, to their penchant for feeding people they don't like to wild animals, Rome is truly the shining example of what other nations can only hope to accomplish. We can't really talk about empires or empires in decline without talking about the Roman one. And it just so happens that Americans, from politicians to far-right history YouTubers, love to compare the US to Rome. So, is there something to this comparison? Is the US the new Rome? In a lovely bit of cosmic irony, the first book of Edward Gibbon's ambitious six-volume work, The History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, was published in 1776, on the eve of the birth of a new empire, one that would go on to become arguably the most powerful in history. In some ways, the United States and the Roman Empire do have a lot in common.
Behold, dear Petronius, my new Rome.
An insatiable desire for expansion, extreme inequality, a globe-spanning network of influence, a penchant for chattel slavery, military dominance, and decadent displays of wealth. There have been countless books, essays, political diatribes, and social media posts earnestly comparing the United States to Rome, and often for good reason. Both empires were bogged down in endless wars, both displayed a shocking level of wealth inequality, both suffered economic crises that commentators in both eras were certain would spell the final end of the golden age of civilization. And if we're being honest, both had about the same response to disease outbreaks, which is to say those in power let a whole lot of people die and isolated themselves as best they could. But we should also note that a lot of the people making these comparisons are only doing it because they have this weird thing about mythologizing the United States. It's a very young country, comparatively speaking, so what better way to afford it a little extra grandeur than giving ourselves the title of the New Rome, the shining city on a hill, the glorious republic that commands the world itself. That fits very nicely into the whole manifest destiny, American exceptionalism thing. We'll get back to that towards the end of the video. But first, we need to address what the end of an empire actually looks like. I'm sure you've heard the phrase, the fall of Rome. Despite the popularity of the phrase, most academics have moved on from the term fall when talking about the Roman Empire. The consensus now is that it wasn't any single inflection point that triggered a dramatic collapse, but an agonizing, generations-long slide into a decreased standing in the world. There wasn't one single point where we could say, Rome was an empire yesterday, and today it's a failed project. The real world doesn't work like that. There were certainly some instances one could point to as chapter markers near the end of the story. For example, around the year 476, there wasn't really an emperor claiming the vast swaths of land the empire had once held with an iron fist. But if we're looking for a Marvel-esque announcement that Rome has fallen, we're not gonna find one. What we can trace, and it's easier to do so in retrospect, is a series of minor failures that go unaddressed. Crumbling infrastructure due to lack of investment, rampant corruption, severe inequality, dwindling trust in institutions or leadership, humiliating military defeat, or endless conflict sapping resources. These all add up to a very real challenge to the structure of an empire. To take the Roman example, the city of Rome itself had been sacked multiple times, but what really did the city in was when the supply chain failed. state-subsidized grain shipments on state-subsidized ships tied up at state-subsidized docks. Eventually, as the state was less able or willing to maintain these mundane but crucial projects, things sort of just fell apart over time. It's never one big collapse, it's death by a thousand cuts. Countless seemingly insignificant failures that together add up to an inability to function. A useful way to think about this can be found in Isaac Asimov's Foundation trilogy, which is now actually a really good show if you're into sci-fi. Much like Harry Seldon prophesied a series of crises along the path of the Empire's long and painful collapse, so too can we take a step back and see a handful of big red dots on the timeline of American decline. I don't want to spoil the show, but suffice it to say that it has a really good understanding of the scale we're talking about when looking at the process of decline. It's not a quick and dramatic collapse. These things take decades or even centuries, but the cracks are already there. And every once in a while, a pillar buckles. The Great Depression, the Red Scares and McCarthyist pogroms, 9/11, the 2008 financial crash and Great Recession, COVID, and now the handful of crises that have been simmering for decades and are coming to a head, the climate crisis and the collapse of US imperial control of the periphery. We're losing ground economically, militarily, and geopolitically to China. The US regime's steadfast support for the genocide of the Palestinian people has ensured no country in the Third World will ever believe our rhetoric about self-determination and freedom again. Just like that, an entire generation of Americans disabused of the myth that we're the good guys. And this is where the usual Western analysis begins to fail. A lot of people make the mistake of attributing crises of empire to the failures or excesses of individual leaders or people or groups with influence. It's always the other team that's making things go wrong. It's Trump on immigration and LGBT rights. It's Biden on funding endless proxy wars. While megalomaniacs or senile old warmongers can certainly make things worse, the underlying logic of the system in which they operate is the determining factor in how the crises they lead us through are handled. Take COVID, for example.
I know that we will achieve victory and quickly return to the path of exceptional health, safety, and prosperity for all of our citizens. We have to get back to work. Our people want to work. They want to go back. They have to go back.
Because the United States follows a capitalist economic philosophy, the key consideration during the pandemic was keeping the gears of the market turning, regardless of the human toll. The prime directive of capitalism is the accumulation of capital, and if that means we have to sacrifice low-paid workers on the altar of profit, so be it. There was no meaningful difference between Trump and Biden on this issue, despite the two leaders being characterized as polar opposites by the media class. If you look beneath the aesthetic differences between the two major parties, if you ignore the bombastic rhetoric and empty posturing on social issues, and look strictly at the economic base of the system we live under, it's clear that every single great man one could point to is beholden to the same interests, and is therefore more of a byproduct of the system than a leader that changes it. Okay, so if it's not the leaders, then what makes the difference between empires that endure and empires that fall? Every nation and empire in history has faced challenges. Nothing exists in a vacuum. So what sets apart an empire that meets these challenges and one that's on the way out? In a nutshell, resilience. The ability of the system to react to, adapt to, and overcome the challenges they're presented with. Rebuilding key infrastructure after a natural disaster. Reassessing the system after an economic crisis to make sure it doesn't happen again. Taking swift action to protect people from a major disease outbreak. You can probably see where I'm going with all this. Take infrastructure. Flint, Michigan still has undrinkable water, despite the government finally promising to replace the water lines. Much of New Orleans is still destroyed or underwater 18 years after Hurricane Katrina. We have trains going off the rails at a rate of 4.8 derailments per day, many of those trains carrying toxic chemicals, as we saw firsthand when we went to East Palestine, Ohio earlier this year. The United States is notorious for letting its infrastructure fail and never repairing it. When it comes to economic disasters, things aren't any better. In the wake of the 07-08 financial crash and the recession that followed, nearly 10 million Americans lost their homes. Those homes were snatched up by institutional investors like BlackRock, and most of them are still held hostage on the rental market today. Did the government do anything about the conditions that led up to this crisis? Not really. They gave a couple people a slap on the wrist, but the vast majority of the criminal executives that profited from the real estate bubble and swindled the American people got off scot-free. And now, experts are saying it kinda looks like there's another bubble brewing. Most Americans are worse off now than they were in 2007. They haven't recovered. And if there is another crash, things will get even worse for even more people. Then, of course, there's COVID. Was there an answer to curbing the death toll of the pandemic? Yes. Did American leadership know what it was? Yes. Did they follow the science and prevent those deaths? No, they did not. In fact, they did the opposite, waxing poetic about the importance of the market and how valued our frontline workers are. And then they moved on. Over a million people died so the line wouldn't go down for a bit. Yet another failure of the American empire. The United States relies on a system that is not and can never be resilient. Capitalism demands running the leanest operation possible. No safety nets, no guardrails. Everything delivered at the last possible moment in the bare minimum amount. Corners cut at all levels of enterprise. When all the reasonable cuts have been made, then they come for the nickels and dimes. That means stripping benefits. No more pensions, no more healthcare, no more vacation time or parental leave. It means moving from employment to gig work, full-time hours to piecemeal contracts. And all of this is just on the domestic front. Those in power don't care if they have a pissed-off workforce. They know we have to accept whatever job we can get or we starve. There's no choice there. What they do care about is maintaining their geopolitical interests abroad. But once again, because of the logic of capitalism, the empire's grip is slipping. When we're the only game in town, we can give developing countries loans with obscenely exploitative conditions. We can force them to privatize, to sell off their industry to American investors, to buy back the goods that their own resources produced at exorbitant rates. Of course, the rest of the world hates us. But we don't care. We're the dominant world power. So in our arrogance, we outsource all our manufacturing to China to cut costs. Meanwhile, China has been taking the long view, thinking 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead, following common sense development plans, raising the standard of living of their people, building high-tech, modern cities that blow our infrastructure and productive capacity out of the water. And then, eventually, while we were busy bombing a dozen countries at once and making enemies around the world, China extends their hand in collaboration. Now there's a second economic superpower in the mix, one that offers development aid without the ridiculous requirements, one that benefits all involved parties, that looks ahead to a more connected, collaborative future and not one of imperialist domination. It's no wonder the US is losing trade deals and borrowers left and right. They're simply a better alternative. And when a country that has become entirely dependent on extracting wealth from the third world loses the ability to do so, what happens? They lash out. They get more violent. They start proxy wars in geostrategic locations to try to regain the upper hand. When a more lucrative or more strategic option becomes available, they dump their previous lackey and leave them to implode and be carved up by foreign investors. There's a reason we're looking at war with Russia over Ukraine, war with China over Taiwan, and war with the entire Arab world over Israel. It's because war is the last chance the US empire has to give itself a shot in the arm and limp along for another few decades as the dominant power. Will it work? We'll see. But here's the thing we really need to internalize. We now live in a time where there is no longer anyone alive who remembers a time before American global dominance. Since World War II, and certainly since the illegal dissolution of the Soviet Union, the US has had very nearly uncontested control of the world. This has led to a perception among Americans, even those who are critical of the country's behavior, that the US really is special. That our empire won't go the way of all the others. That somehow we'll overcome all these challenges and avoid collapse or fading into irrelevance. We all have to grapple with the fact that this will not be the case. We are living through the end of an empire. It may not seem dramatic, it might not fit the apocalyptic vision of collapse we've come to expect, it may take another 100 years, but the US is on the way out. The contradictions have become so sharp and the failures so frequent that it should be clear to all but the most devoted acolytes to the cult of capitalism that the American empire has begun to wane. I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that my content is only possible thanks to my patrons on Patreon. I recently made the decision to leave Nebula, so I'm back to being 100% independent. It's exciting, but also a little nerve-wracking, since Nebula handled all my sponsors. If you enjoy the work we're doing here at Second Thought, and you're able to chip in even a dollar a month, I would greatly appreciate your support. Every patron, regardless of pledge amount, gets early access to every video, plus access to our patrons-only Discord server. We've got everything from a recommended reading list to a book club, and I try to do a live Q&A every month or so. We've built a great community, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. We're a small team here. We don't have institutional backing, so we're entirely dependent on viewer support. If you'd like to help keep this operation afloat, visit patreon.com/secondthought and become a patron today. If you enjoyed this video, consider dropping a like. If you hated it, a thumbs down. You can check out our other content by following the links on your screen. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.